Today we are celebrating the appearance day of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. As most of you know, these celebrations called Vyasa Puja, because this is not a personality cult. It's not that one person has some insights, one person has some special knowledge, and then begins to teach. No. On Vyasa Puja Day, you should understand that point firmly. On Vyasa Puja Day, you are glorifying the representative of Krishna for bringing the message of Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva, the literary incarnation of Krishna, compiled the Vedic literature. And those who follow accurately in the line of presenting the message of Krishna, they get merit simply by delivering the message of Vyasadeva intact. So there is no question of personality cult. Let us follow this person with his unique insights and unique special knowledge. No, that is not Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means the postal system. We are glorifying Srila Prabhupada, first of all, because he presented the message of Lord Krishna as it is without alteration. That is a great achievement. As Srila Prabhupada writes in his introduction to Bhagavad Gita, that before he finished his Bhagavad Gita as it is, there were so many versions of Bhagavad Gita, but all of them simply obscured the message of Krishna. There were so many versions in the English language. In spite of so many editions, no one ever became a devotee of Krishna by reading Bhagavad Gita. Now, isn't that quite phenomenal? Those of you who have read Bhagavad Gita now, you know, the whole point is how to practice bhakti yoga, how to render transcendental loving service to the Lord. Yet there were so many editions of Bhagavad Gita in the English language, but not one person in the Western world decided, let me be a devotee of Krishna by reading them. They're reading Krishna's book, but they're not motivated to serve Krishna. That is because the message had been distorted. But when Srila Prabhupada wrote his Bhagavad Gita as it is, then devotees of Krishna sprang up everywhere, because the message was presented as it is, intact. The postman, you all know that example, the postie, gets credit simply for delivering the post without change. The postie doesn't open the letters and change them. So the representative of Krishna gets credit for delivering Krishna's message as it is. And then you see results. First of all, we are glorifying Srila Prabhupada for delivering the message as it is. He had great determination to present Krishna's teachings so that everyone could feel the impact and be affected. Perhaps most of you have never in your life looked at any other translations of Bhagavad Gita. If you ever have done so, you know what I'm speaking of. It's quite amazing how persons can comment on Bhagavad Gita and ignore Krishna, and comment on it in such a way as to lead people away from Krishna. This was the phenomenon, especially in the 60s, when Srila Prabhupada first came to the West, because at that time there was no New Age movement in which it's popular for everyone just to present their own concoctions. Back then it was popular that you get some ancient Eastern book and present your own interpretation. nowadays it's even worse that you don't want to comment on anything from the past. Now is all that there is. Each one of us can come up with our own truth. Now, things are just degenerating. But back then, India was a very cool place, and in New York City, the major cities of America, practically a new avatar would arrive at the airport every day coming over from India. So many yoga teachers and swamis and sadhus and gods. It's bewildering, so many of them. You cannot appreciate now how that was. Into this atmosphere, Srila Prabhupada arrived and presented Bhagavad Gita as it is. And simply by doing that, everything began to change. I remember in the university, I've sometimes said, I wanted to study Hinduism. So I went to the course and got the prescribed reading list, and I went to the bookshop, the university bookshop, to get the book. So Bhagavad Gita was on the list. It was commented by one Englishman named Edgerton. So I got the book, and I took it back to my flat to read. And the front of the book was the attempted translation, and the second half of the book was so-called purports. So to this day I remember, I just turned, flipping the pages in the back of the book, looking at the person's commentary. And he wrote that Krishna is a concept meant to please both the intellectuals and the sentimentalists. Is the way Bhagavad Gita was being presented. Krishna is a concept, an intellectual concept. This is the kind of thing that Srila Prabhupada had to deal with in trying to establish Krishna consciousness in the West. No one knew who is Krishna, even when reading Krishna's book. It's like you write a biography of yourself, an autobiography. My name is such and such. I was born in such and such a place. This is how to contact me. This is what I do. And you write that autobiography, and you make it available, and then other people take your autobiography and make their own comments that he doesn't really exist, and you can't find him anywhere. And actually, there's no difference whether you think he's an intellectual concept or not. Some of you will be intellectuals and you want to think of him in this way. Others will be sentimentalists, you want to think of him that way. Actually, it doesn't matter because he's just the principle. He's just the idea. You would be very disturbed. And certainly Krishna's devotees are very disturbed when the Lord's message is mangled. You know how thick Bhagavad Gita as it is. But I hope that you remember that Srila Prabhupada's first rendition of Bhagavad Gita as it is was stolen. You can imagine putting in so much effort to produce such a book. And then a publisher in South India came forward to publish the book, and Srila Prabhupada was very excited. This is before he went to the USA. This is before he took sannyas. So he went home to get the manuscript. Shut the door, please. He went home to get the manuscript, and it was gone. All that work finished. So Srila Prabhupada began again. How many of us would have been that determined? If any of you have ever written anything, and you know how much trouble it is, and then to suddenly lose the whole manuscript because someone stole it. Extraordinary blow. Another example of Srila Prabhupada's determination to carry out the order of his spiritual master. So he arrived in New York at a time when, as I said, a different avatar was arriving every day. You have no idea what the scene was like then. Maybe you've heard some of the names now. Guru Maharaji, the boy god, 16 years old, packing stadiums with 60,000 people. They all thought he was God. Really, packing huge sports stadiums. Like you can imagine, 16-year-old Indian boy going to, what's the big stadium in New Zealand, the Mount Eden thing? Mount Smart, that's bigger. Are they in Wellington? They're building a new sports arena now. So you can imagine a 16-year-old Indian boy speaking in this huge sports arena. I am God. I have the divine light mission. And Westerners, 60,000 at a time, hearing this. You can't imagine. And there were so many different types of yoga teachers, yoga institutes everywhere, taught by elderly Indians with gray beards and saffron cloth. And this was the situation that Srila Prabhupada arrived in. Presenting the message of Krishna as it is. The other swamis and yogis told him, oh, you're going to the USA, you're going to have to change. But Srila Prabhupada refused to change the message of Krishna. I remember watching him speak in 1975 in Balboa Park in San Diego. Big outdoor park, just like you have when it's your park here. The big park in Christchurch.
Thank you.
So, there was a big park like that in San Diego. And we were having a festival there, and Srila Prabhupada was speaking. And he began giving his grave presentation of Bhagavad Dharma. And he was 2 minutes into his lecture when all of a sudden, this was the hippie days, one of the hippies interrupted him from, said, but you can't have sex, and I want sex. 2 minutes into a lecture about the science of God, you know, and someone, no, you say we can't have sex, I want sex. So Srila Prabhupada immediately changed his whole lecture and started talking about the principles of the Grihastha Ashram. I was just astonished. I mean, he really got into all the details. Oh, you want sex? That's all right. You can have sex once a month at this time when the woman is like this and that, and you have to chant, and then you can have sex. Krishna says, Dharma Rudo Bhuteshu, Kamasmi Bharatashava, I am sex according to religious principles. So we don't say no sex, but we say that. Has to go on in this way. Getting into all the technical details. I was just astonished. I'm in the woman's biological cycle and all these things. This is how uncompromising the problem was. Not afraid to present Krishna's instructions. I remember watching that with astonishment. He didn't flinch at all. You could just see yourself trying to give a talk somewhere about Krishna consciousness, and 2 minutes into your talk, someone, but you guys say, and I want, you would just, you'd be very nervous, you'd be very taken aback. You'd probably try to, avoid the discussion. You'd probably say, oh, we have many married persons and they have jobs. Okay, next point. But no, Srila Prabhupada just dove right into it. Went right, got really into all the details of the procedure. And firmly told the whole hippie audience, so this is the way a human being lives. In this way, Srila Prabhupada was very radical. He was not presenting Bhagavad Dharma as some kind of intellectual curiosity. He was making a complete revolution by presenting a complete process for purification. And this was news to everybody in the Western world. Purification. It was very trendy back then to being to India, people were wearing Madras shirts, beads, lighting incense at every opportunity. The Beatles were into India. They were going to see Maharishi. It was very cool and trendy to have some kind of guru, to have some kind of yoga teacher. But of course, it was totally uncool and totally untrendy to contemplate such things as the regular principles. So into this atmosphere, Srila Prabhupada implanted Krishna consciousness in the West during the height of foolish idealism and hedonism under the guise of hippiedom and counterculture. Srila Prabhupada showed what is real counterculture, purification. So try to understand his achievement on two levels. First of all, he had to teach people what it means to be a human being. Then he had to teach the highest things about Krishna. But first, he had to make them human beings. This has never been done before, doing both things simultaneously. Making people into human beings while imparting Krishna bhakti to them. You see, in India's past, it's hard to find today, but in India's past, there was Vedic culture, which provided the means for people to gradually develop. At least in the culture, people would have the basics of what it means to be a human being. There was family structure, occupational divisions. Society was orderly, organized so that people would have some material basis so they'd be peaceful and could contemplate spiritual truth. But in the West, that does not exist. So Srila Prabhupada had to turn animals into human beings and Krishna Bhaktas all at the same time. An inconceivable achievement. On the one hand, he was explaining the basics of human life. The regular principles don't make you a transcendentalist, they make you a human being. And on the other hand, he would explain about Krishna's pastimes and how to rejoin Krishna Leela. This is such an astounding contribution. What did Srila Prabhupada attribute his success to? I'm simply trying to carry out the order of my spiritual master. He never said, I am a Shakta Vaishavatar, therefore I can do this. I am special in Krishna's eyes, therefore I can do this. No. He always simply said, I'm just carrying out the order of my spiritual master. All success comes from that. Not only did he present the message of Krishna unchanged, but he went to such great lengths, such great effort to deliver that message. What is someone doing at 70 years old, wandering around alone in New York? You wouldn't like to see someone 70 years old wandering around in the center of Christ Church, Cathedral Square. You can imagine someone, 70-year-old man from India, lands in Christ Church and is walking around Cathedral Square with just a few dollars in his pocket. Well, Cathedral Square is like kindergarten compared to New York City. Sometimes I hear devotees explaining how rough, you know, the area is in the center city of Christ Church. It's just child's play compared to New York City. But Srila Prabhupada arrived in New York City with practically no money and tried to begin his preaching mission. He originally planned to only stay 2 months. He figured, I'll try in this way. That was his original plan. Why did he go to the USA? He once explained that. Because his spiritual master said, you preach in the West, you preach in English. So he said, I chose the USA because some of my godbrothers, they had gone to England, maybe even a few to Germany, and they had failed. So I figured, well, let me go fail in a different place. And you know the prayers that he wrote upon arriving in the USA. My dear Lord Krishna, I do not know why you have brought me here. And he recorded his reactions upon seeing the gross materialism and the ignorance of the people. He said, I don't know how they'll ever be able to be Krishna conscious. But I also know that if anyone hears your transcendental glories, they'll change. So I'm simply praying to you, Lord, that you make my power of speaking potent so the message will penetrate their heart. I'm your puppet. You make me dance as you like. By your will, they went into Maya. By your will, they can come out of Maya. So they call me Bhaktivedanta. Now I'm praying you please fulfill the real purport of that title. I don't want it to be an empty title. You make the meaning come to life for your pleasure. Sometimes, as we're going through our various life changes in Krishna consciousness, we may wonder, how can we keep that mood that Srila Prabhupada demonstrated of dependency on Krishna and taking risks to satisfy Krishna, going out on a limb to give Krishna pleasure. You can preserve that mood, no matter what ashram you're in, simply by struggling in all circumstances to keep your situation Krishna conscious. Certainly if you have family, you cannot go wandering off on your own trying to teach Krishna consciousness. You have your home responsibilities, but those home responsibilities, if they're done properly, require great determination. How to keep the family ship afloat in Krishna consciousness? If you just want a bill-paying family, a mortgage-paying family or a house-renting family, that you can do. But if you want a Krishna-conscious family, that requires constant effort, especially if they're children. We can all, no matter what ashram we're in, we can all take note of Srila Prabhupada's staunch dedication to giving Krishna pleasure in any circumstance. So I remember in New York in the early 70s, going out on Sankirtan, and every day you'd meet so many devotees of yogis and avatars and gods. You can't imagine what it was like. They just come up to you practically one every hour. Don't you know so-and-so is God? I'm a follower of Swami such-and-such. He's God, and he can teach you that you're God. They would just come up to you and challenge. Don't you know Guru Maharaji is Krishna? Aren't you going to the sports stadium tonight to see him? God has come. Aren't you going? This is what it's like. You can't conceive of that now. And Srila Prabhupada told us at that time that he said, if you just go on trying to establish Krishna consciousness, one day all these bogus yogis and avatars and gods will go away. That was very hard for us to accept. It was like saying, on a rainy day, when it's been raining day after day for 2 weeks, that one day it won't rain anymore. But it did happen. Within a few years, the plane loads of avatars and gods stopped coming. Guru Maharaji went bust. When Guru Maharaji, the boy god, was in Hong Kong, someone came up and threw a cream pie in his face. Those Srila Prabhupada immediately noted, just see, he's God. Someone threw a pie in his face. Well, what can he do? it sounds funny to you now. How can people accept a 16-year-old boy as God? You can't. Filling stadiums, 60,000 people. All convinced he is God. He would go from city to city, filling stadium after stadium. You cannot imagine. So then, the boy got a little proud, and his mother, who was managing him, she then told the newspapers, actually, I made a mistake. He's not God, my other son is God. So that was the end of the boy God. The newspapers, they made a big thing out of it. Mother of God confused, picks wrong son. So then he started to go down in popularity. Although even today, there's still remnants existing today. This was a normal thing back then. This is the situation Srila Prabhupada had to put up with in preaching. Simply presenting Bhagavad Gita as it is. For that, just for that, we glorify Srila Prabhupada. And then, of course, there are the great lengths he went to teach Bhagavad Gita. How, at such an advanced age, in such an unfamiliar place, he labored to introduce Krishna consciousness. For this we also glorify him. And how he would always give the credit to the fact that he's simply trying to carry out the order of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. That was where he credited his strength to. Right now in the Western world, you can easily see that you don't have civilization. When Srila Prabhupada first came, he had to hammer that point quite regularly, that we don't have real civilization. Things were not as degraded as they are now. Now it's quite apparent to most people, to most thinking people, that they're living in a zoo. Back then, even in the hippie days, things were not as wild as they are now. Generally, in the 60s, 70s, a girl or boy would be pretty well behaved until the age of 18. And that's when you go wild. During high school, you were good. But as soon as you got out of high school, especially when you went to university, then you would get into all the things you were missing. But at least you didn't do anything until you were 18. No question of running away from home or anything like that. Now, all these things start at 13, even younger. So now it is quite apparent what Srila Prabhupada was referring to. That our societies are simply composed of educated cats and dogs. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers would minimize his contribution. They would say that, oh, Swami Bhaktivedanta, he has some particular attachment to preaching to low-class people. We did not leave India, we did not leave Vrindavan because we do not share those inclinations. But he had some particular way of dealing with low-class people, and therefore he had success. But we did not have that affinity. There's no question of affinity for low-class people. It's simply compassion and desire to carry out the order of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Sometimes Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, they would say, well, he has a business ability. That's how come he could do it. He was a good businessman before he was a sannyasi, so therefore he could spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. And they refused to see that he was simply attached to carrying out the order of his spiritual master, regardless of his own inconvenience. So you have two things. The presenting of Krishna's message as it is, and the complete determination and faith in the order of his spiritual master, who told him to spread Lord Chaitanya's message in the Western countries. What was it like to be a disciple when Srila Prabhupada was physically present? They were very exhilarating times. They are also very wild times. Sometimes younger devotees now like to think that, well, back then, surely everything was perfect, and then when Srila Prabhupada disappeared, then things became problematic. No, they were the same kind of problems back then, because basically what Srila Prabhupada did was present Krishna consciousness to a bunch of savages. So there were problems with the savages back then. There are problems with the savages now. Everyone by now knows the real preoccupation of Western so-called civilization. What is the main problem? Westerners cannot live without illicit sex life. That was the problem then, and that is the problem now. The scope of this problem is so immense that even Srila Prabhupada was often quite amazed how dog-like the attachments of Western society are. How to spread Krishna consciousness in the face of such doggish behavior? To see marriages come together and fall apart at the drop of a hat. One minute someone's wearing saffron, the next minute they're doing debauched behavior. You can't understand how abominable this was to Srila Prabhupada, but still he pushed on, giving credit to his disciples when they would do something wonderful, and tolerating their craziness. The more we begin to understand how Western so-called culture is controlled by the mode of passion, lust, the more we can understand why it's useless. Civilization is meant for purifying you of these things, but you're living in a society that does not purify. In fact, it goes the opposite. It intensifies the pollutions. So this is what Srila Prabhupada had to deal with. Now just imagine if Srila Prabhupada came and said, just chant Hare Krishna and don't worry about following any rules. And don't worry about being engaged in Krishna's service. Just believe in Krishna. Just imagine. Probably for a while, he would have been much more popular. Just try to do that now. You'll be more popular for a while. You can just see yourself. I'm telling you all a new way of Krishna consciousness. You just chant, you don't worry about following any rules, and you just believe in Krishna, that's all. No one will get purified. So Srila Prabhupada took the whole Western civilization by the horns and grabbed it. This is the way it is. We have our regimen, our program for purification. That is Krishna consciousness. The problem is that Westerners have a tough time handling that. They have a tough time living without illicit sex life. That problem has not gotten any better, it's gotten worse because society has degraded even more. What 18 and 19 year olds would do in the 70s, now 12 and 13 year olds are doing. What was an X-rated movie in the 70s, is now normal television programs. So please try to understand what Srila Prabhupada was coping with and where the problems are coming from. The whole notion that people marry and then in the drop of a hat separate, this was totally alien to him. Therefore, Although in the beginning of his efforts, he personally took part in marriages. By the time, 5 years, by the time in the early 70s, he just said, I cannot personally take responsibility for these things. He saw how whimsical the Westerners are about any kind of vow, whether it's married life or renounced or any kind of vow. If you feel different next year, drop it. You cannot understand the depths of compassion and determination required to push on amidst such circumstances, trying to administer Krishna consciousness to such savages. Educated savages. They knew everything except who they are. They knew everything except how to control their senses. So this is what Srila Prabhupada was pushing against. You chant Hare Krishna, you follow the regular principles, you adopt a lifestyle of purification. Now, what was going to give the whole vision for this wholesale revolution in human behavior? That's why Srila Prabhupada relied upon his books. They would give you the whole new, or timelessly old, world view, so that you could see the whole picture, why you should be purified and how to live in a purified way and how society should be purified. Srila Prabhupada relied upon his books to do that. But he often complained, they like to sell my books, but they don't read them. Nowadays, he might complain both ways. They don't sell or read. But back then, because he was personally beating the drum of Sankirtan, he would sometimes say, the whole world is noticing how this little old man in India is beating his drum, and all over the world, people are going out to distribute transcendental literature. So back then, he would complain that they like to sell, but they don't read. I'm putting so much effort into every word. Another time, he explained how they become so restless, these Western people. One minute they're here, and then I want to go to India. Oh, then I want to go to this temple. I want to go to that temple. They said, why don't they just solidify, stabilize, read my books? Then they'll become peaceful. But no, they're so restless. Let me go here. Let me go there. Do this, do that. They don't know how to use their human form of life properly. They don't know how to invest their capital. This human body is a great investment, but you don't know how to deal with it. You don't know how to make the best use of it. So these are things that have been problems over the years. Westerners cannot stay away from illicit sex. Westerners are restless. They cannot keep promises. You have the famous Western dog honor. I promise, but oh, that was last month. Now the situation has changed. This is Western dog honor. Vedic honor means I promise, but even though it's turned out not to be in my favor, still I promise. Just like Maharaj Dasarath, the father of Lord Ram. He promised his wife, I give you a benediction. You can ask. And she said, not now, later. Because she had helped him when he was wounded on the battlefield. So she waited until the night before Lord Ram was to be coronated king of Ayodhya. And then she reminded her husband that you promised me. Now I'm asking, I don't want Ram to be king, I want my boy to be king. Ram's born of your other wife, I want the son born of me to be the king. So Dasarath had to keep his promise. He hesitated and she needled him. What kind of kshatriya are you? Don't you keep your word? Now, in Western culture, of course, we have no problem dealing with that situation. But yes, yes, I appreciated the service you gave me on the battlefield, but, you know, we have a different situation now. And by the way, you're not my favorite wife anymore, so, haven't you noticed? So therefore, things will go on as I want, even though I promise. Everyone will understand that. Yes, yes, circumstances are different, of course. That's the Western concept of honor. Vedic honor is completely something different. So this is what Srila Prabhupada observed amongst Westerners. They cannot keep a vow. They cannot hold a steady course, and their senses are so agitated. Vegetarianism, they don't mind. No one bloops, no one leaves Krishna consciousness because they want to eat meat. Gambling, they can stay away from that. Intoxication can be a problem, but illicit sex, this is seen as mission impossible. And the problem has simply gotten worse as society has degraded. More and more we can appreciate Srila Prabhupada's basic program that he gave us as the founder and charter of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Chant at least 16 rounds, follow the four regular principles even in household life. And keep Krishna the center of your life, of your home, and try to do something to spread the message of Lord Chaitanya. And Srila Prabhupada gave us specific goals to try for. And to keep us on course and to keep us understanding the whole picture of what we're dealing with, he gave us his books. He said, if you want to know me, read my books. Sometimes some of you may lament, oh, why wasn't I physically present when Prabhupada was around? Even if you were, you probably wouldn't have gotten a chance to have personal association. But you would have taken shelter of Prabhupada's books. And now you have those books. But sometimes I notice our devotees, they're not taking shelter of Prabhupada's books. They like to read so many things. And of course, these days there is so much spiritual literature available in Krishna consciousness. But what is the use if you have not acquainted yourself with Prabhupada's books, upon which everything is based? So it takes discipline, it takes some dedication to read Prabhupada's books. You actually have to focus, just like when you go to school, first grade, second grade, third grade, similarly. You have to go up through the cantos, then you have to read Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar of Devotion, Krishna book, Nectar of Instruction. If you don't do that, you'll never understand the whole picture, the whole Krishna conscious panorama and how you fit in. Then you will start to think, oh, this is a personality cult. They're glorifying this person, Srila Prabhupada, who gave his unique realizations and unique angles. You won't see the whole picture, how the present ties in with the past, even the ancient past. I don't think that's going to work. When you read Srila Prabhupada's books, you get a complete vision of what human society should be and your role in that. Everyone wants to be a part of something meaningful and significant. But unless you educate yourself through Prabhupada's books, you won't be able to see how you fit in. And you'll be easily left open to be deviated and get spaced out and spun out. You can notice devotees who don't properly take shelter of Prabhupada's books, they get caught up in gossip, they go off on a tangent. Their intelligence is not fixed. Because they're ignoring, they're overlooking the very thing that Srila Prabhupada, the founder of Acharya, gave for stabilizing you, making you peaceful, and purifying your intelligence. Today is a good day for us to reconsider our commitment to reading Srila Prabhupada's books. Certainly, it would be nice to discuss distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, but reading them has to be emphasized also. And that's something everyone can do, whether you're living in the ashram or living at home. You can make those books the center of your residence. Nowadays, unfortunately, we have persons living in the ashram. They don't take the books as their life and soul. We have persons living in their homes. They don't take the books as life and soul. And therefore, there are problems. People are restless. They get no inner fiber. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Anjalila, Srila Prabhupada says that just like if you don't eat grains every day, you'll grow weak. Similarly, if you don't read my books every day, he said, you'll grow weak and fall away. What does it mean to fall away? It means to give up the staunch practice of bhakti yoga. That's what it means to go away. It's not good enough that, oh, you're still a vegetarian and you say Hari Bol. Going away means no longer do you adhere to the basic sadhana, which is your means of making spiritual advancement. What we're trying to discuss today is the scenario in which we're trying to be Krishna conscious. How Srila Prabhupada cope with that? What have been the usual problems which existed then and exist now? And as society degrades more and more, those problems get worse and worse. Nowadays, so many candidates to Krishna consciousness come from dysfunctional homes. Back in the 60s and 70s, the homes weren't really dysfunctional. They were just completely materialistic. Now, most of the persons coming, they come from homes that don't exist or that are abusive, even in a materialistic sense. So naturally, you're going to see some problems from that as people try to be Krishna conscious because they're coming from abused circumstances. If you've been taking intoxication and having illicit sex from a young age, you become habituated to that. And therefore, if you're put into the ashram, you may not immediately kick that habit. All these things place great demands upon the other devotees. And you can sympathize with Srila Prabhupada coming from India and having to deal with the hippies in Greenwich Village. Things are worse now. Without compassion, we won't be able to deal with it. It's true, things are becoming so degraded that any sane person just wants to get away and just mind your own business. Who can deal with these people? They're so low. But we have our debt to Srila Prabhupada to fulfill. Yes, people today are more degraded than most of us were 10, 20, 30 years ago. But we have our debt to pay. Therefore, we still struggle how to present Krishna consciousness because that is our debt to Srila Prabhupada. Don't lament that you didn't have Srila Prabhupada's personal association. Why lament when he said, you can read my books and get to know me. Everything I wanted to say is in my books. I considered every word so carefully. So you can get the same benefit. I myself actually don't think I got one word out of Srila Prabhupada. I just got a sound. That was the extent of my association. They walked into my office at the BBT and just looked me over and just said, mmm. That was it. So you're thinking, oh, if I was around back then, if only I was Krishna conscious back then, I'd be Prabhupada and me going everywhere together.
No, I wouldn't.
Srila Prabhupada was surrounded by a cordon of senior leaders who were here today and gone tomorrow. To be a sannyasi back in the early 70s, you were practically a demigod, but very quickly, due to the revolving door, that status began to change. You wouldn't believe what it was like in the early 70s, you know. When a sannyasi would arrive at the temple, it was like, you know, an angel descending with wings. But due to the attrition rate of the leaders around Prabhupada, because try to understand what Prabhupada was doing. He had to find persons with some kind of expertise in spreading Krishna consciousness. That requires organization, managemental decisions. So he had to try to find those kind of persons amidst these masses of hippies that were coming forward. And he asked that we cooperate with whoever was in charge. And that was a very great austerity. Just like now, in the temple, it's very easy for someone to say, why should I listen to the temple president? Why should I do what others say? So you think, well, it's only that way now, but when Prabhupada was physically present, then everybody cooperated. You might think that. When Prabhupada was physically present, it all worked like clockwork. Everyone surrendered. No. This was the excuse when Prabhupada was physically present. Why should I listen to it when he says? I just want to listen to Prabhupada. And of course, you couldn't get Prabhupada's physical associations. So that meant you were just listening to yourself. So there were problems then. There are problems now. Those who are sincere devotees, you'll make a serious effort to try to understand what is Krishna consciousness. And the books, they will be your mainstay. So let us not be naive about what the difficulties are. Let's recognize where the difficulties are coming from. It's quite apparent now, after more than 30 years of Krishna consciousness in the West, we see what the problem is quite clearly. Westerners do not want to control their senses. They do not want to purify themselves from lust, because all of Western society is built upon lust. It glorifies lust even more than 20 or 30 years ago. Now it's right out in the open, television everywhere. So this has a great effect on devotees. And rather than admit that, oh, I have a problem controlling my senses, then they try to find so many other problems. Oh, there's this reason why I can't surrender, there's that reason. We need good association. Srila Prabhupada said that's why he's established this International Society for Krishna Consciousness, to be a place where there can be association for going back to Godhead. And sometimes we forget that's what our goal in life. We're here for a short time and we're meant to prepare how to go back to Krishna. If you analyze your life in that way, things start to fall into place. Can we have some air in here? It's very warm. Anyway, okay, try that. Do you have the famous heating system on? Sometimes we forget our goal is to go back to Godhead, and then we become lost in so many confusions. What's this devotee doing? What's that devotee? Did you hear what happened across the ocean? Oh, really? I don't know if I can surrender now. Oh, really? Oh. I better start considering my own options. I like one statement Prabhupada gave. He said, if you're on a ship going somewhere, Not everybody on this ship is going to be to your liking. But does that mean you jump off the ship? No. You want to get to your destination. So he explained that similarly in Krishna consciousness, society, there are different kinds of persons. Persons are coming to practice Krishna consciousness under the influence of different modes, passion, ignorance. Rarely you'll find some goodness. So there'll always be a little hubbub. You're not going to get along with everybody. You're not going to be able to agree with everyone. But what is your mission? Your mission is to complete your journey. Just like you're on a ship or an airplane. You've all flown before, and you sat next to somebody who normally you would never sit next to. What can you do? The airline has assigned you. This is your seat. So you look who's next to you. I don't like this person next to me. And then you try to jump out the window? No one will do that. No, you'll think, my purpose on this airplane is to get to my destination. I may like who's sitting next to me, I may not, but I'm supposed to get to the destination. That's what you think. So Srila Prabhupada asks that we consider that way about our relations with devotees. Sometimes they may be to our liking, sometimes not. But what is your goal? What's your destination? You sit tight and get to where you're supposed to arrive. Once we remember our goal in life is to go back to Godhead, everything becomes clear. And that is Srila Prabhupada's greatest contribution. No one has been able to duplicate this. There are other Vaishnavas now coming from India to preach in the West, but no one has been able to duplicate Prabhupada's efforts in terms of constructing a mechanism by which lusty, crazy, ignorant Westerners can go back to Godhead in one lifetime. That requires purification and engagement in devotional service. Nowhere in Bhagavad Gita does Krishna say, just believe in me and you'll go back to Godhead. No. You have to perform devotional service. By performing devotional service, then you can understand Krishna. As we were explaining yesterday, janma karma chame divyam evam yogadita. How can you understand the divine mystery of Krishna's appearance and activities in this world? Only through devotional service. Therefore, if you're serious about completing the goal, you have to look, where is my service? Certainly just by believing, quote unquote, in Krishna, you'll get benefit. But if you want to complete the process, you have to have service. And this is another reason why Srila Prabhupada asked devotees, please just tolerate if there's some problems in the devotional communities, and please just tolerate if there's some misunderstandings. What is your goal? You need devotional service, and then you can go back to Godhead. We've said it before, when the devotional community makes as its premium the engagement in devotional service, then things become very lively. And when that premium is no longer there, things become very dead and dull. The temple becomes a burden. The deities become a burden. Even chanting around becomes a burden. You don't want to even open the books. But when there is the service attitude and engagement in devotional service, then everything becomes clear what to do. We are meant to go back to Godhead. We need devotional service. So we like to see that there is criticism in the temple of the leaders for not providing enough devotional service. That should be the criticism. Where's the service? I'm ready to do something. I'm ready for action. I've got things to give. Time to give, money to give, and it's no one's here to receive it. That should be the criticism. When there's that kind of atmosphere, then it becomes spiritually electric. The kirtans become wonderful, the prasad tastes better. the classes become more alive. Because people are engaged in devotional service, that means they can understand Krishna. And that's what Srila Prabhupada wanted. Engage in service so that you will go back to Godhead. Never did you ever hear Srila Prabhupada say, I don't think it's possible for you all to go back to Godhead this lifetime. You never heard that. Now we say that. It's quite common these days to hear. Well, you know, I'm not going back to God in this lifetime, you know. But, you know, it's just the way it is, you know. And anyway, who else is? No one else is anyway. So, you know, it's just the way things are now, you know. Sure, I believe in Krishna. But, you know, going back to God at the end of this life, oh, I don't think so. In other words, I got a lot of other things I want to do. But Srila Prabhupada constantly presented the point, you can finish up your business in this lifetime. You can go back to Godhead at the end of this life. You don't have to take the escape clause, Suchinam Shimatange Yoga Brastavajayate, that you don't finish your business in this life. You take birth in a family of pious brahmanas or wealthy vices. No, you don't have to take advantage of that. So what greater gift can there be? How persons living in degraded Western societies can complete the perfection of Vedic culture? That opportunity is here. And more than 20 years after Srila Prabhupada's departure, we still see that no one else has successfully presented such a mechanism for going back to God in one lifetime. What was Prabhupada's own comment on how things should go on after his departure? He said, using like a Christmas tree example, I've given you the tree, you just have to decorate it. No, I've given you the tree and the decorations, you just have to put the decorations on. In other words, we have everything we need. We have all the ingredients. We just have to put them where they're supposed to be. So let us meditate on Srila Prabhupada's glorious achievements and what they mean to us as individuals. They're not achievements that are far away from us. They are achievements that matter to each one of us sitting here. Each one of you sitting here can go back to Godhead at the end of your life, if you want to. Now, our problem is we may not want to, but the means is there. Each one of us has Srila Prabhupada's books. We can decide to read them or not. The themes that Prabhupada presents in his books are absolutely necessary to assimilate if you want to survive with your Krishna consciousness. He presents all the issues and the proper thinking that you need to deal with while teaching you about Krishna's pastimes. Such an inconceivable job. Giving you civilization and love of God at the same time. These are some of the things we should be meditating on. Srila Prabhupada always had a sense of urgency. It was not simply because he was old and could die at any moment. No, his sense of urgency was that you can die also at any moment. Sometimes we think, well, he was old, therefore he was like that. But we have so much time. No, Srila Prabhupada never said that. You just take your time. I'm old, but you can go as slow as you want. Anyone found that in any lecture? No. The first time I saw Srila Prabhupada speak at a Sunday feast, I've explained this story before. I finished university. And I was engaged to be married, but the fiancé wasn't taking to Krishna consciousness. So finally, after some efforts to convince her, I just parted and I came to stay at the temple. And then 2 weeks later, Srila Prabhupada came from India. I remember the first time I saw him waiting at the airport in New York, and the door opens, and out walks Srila Prabhupada into the arrival lounge. And then I was living in the temple. I wasn't wearing devotional clothes yet, because of that, things go through various moods. And so at the particular time in the temple, the mood was that you practically, you know, if you wanted to wear devotional clothes, you practically had to convince them you're a Mahabhagavat. That was the mood of the month, the flavor of the month. I mean, you go from so many things. You immediately shave up, or you better wait. We got to see. You know, are you a pure devotee? So I told him, I've been chanting 13 rounds a day, and I've read every book that Prabhupada has put out. They were shocked at that, because most of the devotees in the temple hadn't read all the books. My program was, I didn't want to go to the temples. I would just read the books at home. So finally I did come, and then Srila Prabhupada came 2 weeks later. And as I've explained before, my great fear was that although I was in the temple, any day my ex-fiancée could come and drag me out. So I was always praying to the deities, Radha Govinda, don't let it happen, don't let her drag me out. I prayed to Radha Govinda, get me out of this one, Krishna, I promise you never again, just get me out of this one. So I was sitting before Srila Prabhupada, about 1 meter in front of him, and he's lecturing. And then I feel a tap on my shoulder. I look, and there she is right behind me. So I didn't even bat an eye. I just turned and looked right back at Srila Prabhupada. And she practically burst out crying in the midst of everyone. Like, what is this? He doesn't even recognize me. He doesn't acknowledge me with affection. Mm. So meanwhile, Srila Prabhupada was just roaring like a lion. If you're optimistic about material life, you are an animal. he just kept pounding that point. If you are a human being, you must be pessimistic. Only an animal is optimistic about material life. So he was roaring like that, and then so finally she just got up and left. And then Srila Prabhupada, he started smiling and saying, but in Krishna consciousness, everything is optimistic. So I have personal experience of Srila Prabhupada as a Bhakta leader clearing out the entanglements. He sliced the knot with one swipe of the cleaver, just And the fact is, so many of our attachments, which we think are insurpassable, can be easily dealt with through bhakti yoga. But you need to have that kind of conviction, and that kind of conviction that bhakti yoga will solve your problems can only come through good association. So once again, Prabhupada established this society to give us good association. In Nectar Instruction, he says, I single-handedly started this International Society for Krishna Consciousness as a format where devotees can practice the six loving exchanges. Giving gifts, receiving gifts in charity, giving and receiving prasad, revealing the mind, the other person reveals their mind to you. This is why I started this society. So that these six loving exchanges can go on between devotees, rather than you looking to the material world for these kind of loving exchanges. So, once again, we have contribution from Srila Prabhupada. a format for association by which we can be purified. Otherwise, we'll certainly look to achieve these loving exchanges in the outside world, and then we'll simply get contaminated. By saying that, it doesn't mean we're being cultish. No, we're being practical. We don't want to get sick. We want to become cured. Therefore, we have to practice the six loving exchanges amongst devotees. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada worked so hard to give us a format for doing that. So at this point, more than 30 years after Srila Prabhupada came to the West, we're aware of what the Western problems are. But still, the means to go back to Godhead in this lifetime is available to everyone. And for that, we are inexpressibly grateful to Srila Prabhupada. If we want to do it, we can do it. Our problem is, do we want to do it, though? If you want to do it, find the association so you can do it. It can be done. We have been given the message of Lord Krishna as it is. Great risk has been taken to present that message. We have inherited that message. We have inherited the goal Srila Prabhupada gave us. We still can go back to Godhead in this lifetime, just like when Srila Prabhupada said it 30 years ago. All right. What is next on the table? All right, who's the master of ceremonies? All right, please. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Jinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharini Nirvishesha Shunyavani Pashtachari Shatarini. This is entitled Crying Alone in the Wilderness. That was an expression Srila Prabhupada used to describe his situation before he came to America, when he was in India trying to prepare to come to the West and trying to get support in India. He described that expression about himself, crying alone in the wilderness. No one would help. Allow me to meditate upon you in 1948. For 2 years, you had struggled to get your Gita manuscript published. Suddenly the clouds parted, the glorious moment shone. A Mr. Chaiti of South India requested you send your manuscript to Mr. Alagappa in Madras. There he will arrange for what God has meant for you to do in your religious duty. Your first-class royal edition of the Gita was imminent. Alagappa, the famous Birla of the South, would back you completely. You went home where the manuscript was safely stored. It was gone. Whether servant or even your own son, the thief spoiled years of work, thwarted a priceless opportunity for India and the world. Later, on a street in Delhi, I see you collapse, gored by a stray cow. And then I see you again in 110-degree weather, distributing Krishna-conscious literature, determined to ignore the hot, dusty winds. Half unconscious, you totter and fall, heatstroke. For Mahaprabhu's mission, you appealed to the President of India. I am crying alone in the wilderness at the present moment. His Excellency never replied. In your article, Hope Against Hope, you noted 80% of the Delhi people you met on Sankirtan were atheists, and that was back in 1956. Japan reached for you in 1961. Congress for Cultivating the Human Spirit. Immediately, your innovative vision seized the time. 50 lessons for illustration, 20,000 words poured onto paper. I marvel, where from arose your relentless drive? All expenses in Japan would be paid. A Mr. Nakano would await you at the airport. Watch for me, I'll be holding a Japanese flag. You never got to see it. For the monumental journey there, no money came your way. Desperately you appealed. I am a humble creature. I am just trying to do my bit in this connection because I was so ordered by my spiritual master. In 1965, I watched you ascend the gangway to the Jaladutta. The day before, you had visited Mayapur Dham, seeking strength at your spiritual father's samadhi. Now you disappear into the old black cargo ship. Down on the wharf, only a casual acquaintance had bid you farewell. He was alone, a lone fighter. When he left, there was no one on the shore to bid him goodbye. No friends, no supporters, no disciple, nobody. In the cabin of the Jaladutta, can I feel for you? Sailing to America at the age of 69? Dizziness, headaches, nausea, Bay of Bengal. Then, in the Red Sea, two violent heart attacks in 2 days. Alone at sea, death nearby, you write. I am feeling separation from my lords, Sri Govinda, Gopina, Radha, Damodar. I have no qualification, but I have taken up the risk just to carry out the order of His divine grace. I depend fully on their mercy, so far away from Vrindavan. Through decades of setbacks, reversals, impediments, you always soldiered onward, just for the pleasure of Lord Krishna and your Guru Maharaj. My conclusion, even before you landed in New York, I was incalculably indebted. Trying, though feebly, to be an unconditional servant, David Rinkenstein.